Needless to say, smart board is not working. I am recording what I'm saying, and I will try to take appropriate pictures when I go home and put them up. On the whole, what I do is I record lectures and I capture what's up there, except that involves smart board working correctly, and smart board apparently is not surprisingly, since almost every fall I run into this, there's a new version or new something on it. So, we will continue without it. You should have gotten a note from me basically telling you where my website is, and you should have gotten a note from the school, an email from the school giving you a password. A username and password, and those would both go to your Bristol accounts. The username and password, I tried somebody's last night, and the settings weren't correct. The settings for me were correct, but the settings for you guys weren't correct. So they're in the process of fixing it, because I sent them a note last night. When I got your passwords, basically, I tested a couple of them. Nick, you'll find something at your site that I did when you go in, because I used you as a test. Well, just when you say, where did this come from? So anyway, they are fixing those, and those should be done by Thursday. So we will basically not look at Oracle today, but we will look at some of the vocabulary for our databases, which I frequently end up doing the first day anyway, because frequently there is an issue. Okay, so my website is www.pgrosser.net. I do not use the school's site because I believe in open access, and so there is no password to get onto my site. Okay, it's open access and open available. And it's www.pgrosser.net. When you get there, you want to click on CIS 150. The slash after it is the old name for the course, and some of the handouts still have the old name, so I always put them both up there. Okay, so when you get here, this is my website. Essentially, the note at the top tells you that there are three ways that you can work with Oracle. And we will look at those, as I said, more on Thursday after I get your password and everything settled. But you can download the full version of Oracle and install it on your computer and work locally. That's what I've done. Okay? Yeah. Nothing? Okay. I'm here. So, it's a pain in the neck to install. Be very, very careful to follow directions. There is a free version they let you download. We'll look at that. But if you want to play with it, go ahead, but just do it carefully. And it leaves a lot of footprints. So, if you mess up, then you've got to get rid of the footprints and all the rest. We are using here 12C, version 12C. Last year we used 11G. Doesn't much matter. Oracle is Oracle is Oracle. I've actually made less changes to this course than any other course I teach, because the course focuses on SQL, and SQL is SQL. It doesn't change. It's one of those things that has actually stayed stable for a good many years. The second version is you can work here in the labs with Oracle. And the third version is that we have set up a system where you can log in through PuTTY. And that's what I tried last night with, once I had your passwords. I tried that last night with your passwords. And that's where the problem lay. So they're in the process of fixing that. They fixed it on one person's, and they're now fixing it on everybody else's. But that's, as I said, why we're not going to look at that until Thursday. So you can either download Oracle, you can do Oracle here, or you can log into our Oracle using Putty from home.
Can you do a combination of both?
Sure. You may have to get into importing and exporting at that point,
right,
though. You know, because you're obviously not going to have it saved if you've got your local version at home. Okay. Over on the side is the syllabus. I do not require a book for this course because I essentially have a lot of really good notes out there. 12C, I didn't find a good book yet because 12C is fairly recent. These are two books that I kind of like. Oracle 9i, that goes back a while, but as I said, SQL is SQL. And Oracle Database 11G, which I had for last year. But in fact, I've got an awful lot of notes out there. There is an awful lot that you can find out by just logging in and doing an Oracle search. So I'm not convinced you need a book. So it's your choice whether you want to get a book or not. But if you do get a book, those are two that I found are pretty good explanations. And so you're welcome to get them or not. Grading, there. 80% of your grade is for the work you do. 10% of your grade is for being responsible about the work you do, i.e. getting it in on time, having good quality, and all that good stuff. And 10% of your grade is the final. Okay, so basically, the work is what counts. 80% of your grade is the homework that you produce. And I give a lot of homework. I have been told by students that this is one of the harder courses that I teach. So if you are a freshman, it may be overwhelming, especially at the beginning, because we move fairly fast and there's a lot of material on there. If you've taken a bunch of other computer courses, it's less intimidating. But we will set up a help sessions on Tuesday and Thursday afternoons starting at 2, and then I can get back to you about other times. Carolyn is going to be at the help sessions, so it's really neat that she is taking the Oracle class because that means she's going to know Oracle too. And she does homework on time, so therefore, she is a resource. That is the story. If you keep up with the work, it's not a big problem. If you don't keep up with the work, it's a big problem. And there are a few people that are nodding their heads here. Okay, and others that probably should be. There are actually 25 people in this class. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 9 are here. This class is a student option class, which means you can take it online, you can take it in class, or you can mix and match online and in class. So with a student option class, basically the only one that's required to be here is me, but you don't have to be. So you get to choose whether you want to be in class or not be in class, and you can choose on a daily basis. So if I'm going over something you understand, you can pass on it, or sometimes people have conflicts with one day and they come the other day. It's your call how you want to do that. But it's a student option course. Okay, as far as homework, which is what I said counts a large portion of your grade, I basically don't correct it unless it's good. So I will make comments and send it back to you. That means it does not have a grade. It has not been graded. Okay? The purpose of homework is for you to learn the material. So if you pass in junk or you pass in something that indicates you don't know what is going on and you need some help, or whatever reason, I just don't correct it. I make comments on it, send it back, because I want you to understand the material, and therefore I want you to redo the homework and make sure you do understand it. So, I will tell you at the beginning when I pass it back, fix and resubmit. Feel free to ask questions. But the point is to learn the material, not just to do the homework and get it checked off. The point is to learn the material. And so that's what I want you to do. So therefore, if I don't think you've learned the material, I'm going to give it back to you. Let's see. Smart board presentations, the one that didn't work today. Usually what I do is I will be taking pictures of the screen, and I will put the pictures of the screens up on the board so that you can see the notes, and I can write on the board and put the notes up there. Audio is the recordings, and I am recording today. So any of the, 16 people that aren't here can listen to the recording and find out what happened in class today. Okay? So the recordings go up there. Notes and handouts are what we're going to be going through. Okay? And as I said, I've got a lot of fairly good notes out there. And so we'll be starting out and looking at the notes and handouts up there on Thursday and then moving on. And so we'll be looking at the Oracle stuff starting Thursday after I get your passwords, because I want you to be able to log in and work with me. There are presentations in PowerPoint that go with most of the notes. So you can take a look at those. And every once in a while, one of the presentations goes south. I don't know what happens. If you find a one that isn't working, let me know, and I can find another copy of it and put it up. The weekly schedule is here. And basically, I have... I left a line in about February 1st. You can see I did a copy and paste from last semester. I'll fix that when I go home. But anyway, what I do is I put up here the things that I want you to look at. And essentially, we're going to look at the normalization stuff today, and we're going to look at the login and SQL stuff on Thursday. Let's see. Lots of notes about installation and login that are out under here. Links are just links to some various things on Oracle. So that pretty much runs through what happens. Over the weekends, I post the next week. I don't take down the previous week. So I will post the next week, and assignments are under here, okay? And as I said, I apparently left that assignment up that February 1st is not really a deadline that I'm looking at, okay? So I will take that off when I get home. Okay, questions? Yeah?
Is the Oracle that you get through PuTTY the same as the Oracle you would download?
Yeah, you're using our server Oracle. So you're using the school's Oracle.
Okay, so it really doesn't matter?
No, except that my personal opinion, PuTTY's a pain in the neck.
It is.
So my personal opinion would be not to go that route, but...
Go through the headache of downloading Oracle and then you're home free.
Yeah, and then you can just work at home. Or you can choose to do it here in our labs. They have not made it so you can do it virtually. They haven't got that set up yet. They've actually experimented with that this summer, and I played with it, but they're not where they're making it available. Other questions? Yeah.
I was unable to. I set up my account with Access BCC. I was unable to get to my email, so I did not get the password
okay.
that you sent. So I unfortunately can't log in. So is that going to cause a problem for me?
Not today.
Okay.
And I've got the passwords here, okay. so you can come up and get the password okay. after class. No, because I was originally going to do Oracle today until I discovered that there was a problem. With the student ones that wasn't there with mine, so I basically said, okay, fix that, and then we'll go on. But we weren't going to be able to do all the stuff I wanted you to do until they get that fixed. Basically, they had not given you the right to add records to a table. Once you created a table, it wasn't allowing you to add records to a table. And I'm sure there were other things too, but that's as far as I got. And so they are fixing the permissions, and that they'll be done, they'll probably be done later today. But we'll do it on Thursday. Okay. Other questions? Okay. The main thing for success in this class is to keep up and to ask questions and to come to the help sessions if you're having problems and stay with it. Because if you don't stay with it, the chances for success are not good. I will probably lose half of you. Okay, so probably half of you will not pass the course. So that should give you an indication as to the fact that you should keep up. Okay? And that's the main problem. The main problem is people that don't keep up and then they get in over their heads and then it just doesn't work. And I am a firm believer in that you can read all this stuff in the world, but unless you try it, it's not going to work. Okay? I can read a book, but unless I try it, I'm not going to understand it. I have to try it. And so do you. And that's the purpose of homework, is to force you to try it. Okay, so we are going to look at normalization and some of the vocabulary that goes with setting up a database. Essentially, Oracle is one of the major databases out there. And all the databases, all the relational databases, use SQL. So if you use SQL, which also can be pronounced SQL, okay? If you learn SQL or SQL in one language, you know it in other languages. Now, there are some changes going on in the database world, and big data is out there now. And the major companies that are using big data are big companies. Amazon, that kind of thing. So, big data in a few years may be more prevalent, but right now relational databases are definitely the most prevalent things in all of the local companies and Boston companies for that matter. Okay, so this is a relational database. And a relational database is said to be well designed if it's in third normal form. And what we're going to be talking about is third normal form. So essentially when you design a database, you have to know what you are doing technically, but you have to also know what the business is doing. So databases are rarely designed by one person. They're usually designed by a team with people bouncing ideas off each other because you need the business expertise or the whatever. If you are writing a game, you need the game expertise. If you're in business, you need the business expertise. But you need somebody that understands what the database is going to be holding, what the data is, and how you're going to be using the data on a daily basis. then you need somebody that technically understands how to put that together and make the database a functioning database, technically. So you usually have a group made up of the people that understand how they want to use the data and made up of the people that are designing the database. A database is made up of multiple tables, and each table holds particular data. And these are the rules about it, and we're going to look at these in a second. A relation is in first normal form if it does not contain repeating groups. Okay, what that means is a repeating group is, for example, a student signs up for courses. And if on the table about the student, we have slots for all of the courses that the student can take, then we have to set a limit. Okay, so we say, all right, nobody's going to take more than 30 courses. So we're going to set up 30 repeating groups on the table about the student. So what happens when you hit the 30? Sorry, you can't take any more courses. We only have 30 slots. And that's not particularly practical. So instead, the way most people would design this is they would have two tables. One table would have the name and address information about the student, and the other table would have a record for each course the student is taking. Then there's no limit. I can put 50 records on there for one student and two records on for another student. There's no limit. And so that's why the repeating groups, and I always tell the story, and you've probably heard it before if you've ever taken a course with me, but I wanted to place an order, and when I got to the fifth item, the person thanked me for my order and said, okay, we're done. And I said, but I want to order two more things. And she said, you can't. Because she had five slots, and the five slots were now filled. And I said, but I really want the other two things. And she said, oh, all right. And she started a whole new order for me and asked me for my name again and my address again and set up a whole new order for the two things. And the reason was that there was one table that had my name and address and five slots for five things I wanted to order. Once I'd filled those five slots, the order was done. So to get two more things, I had to have a whole other order built. Okay? Again, what they should have done is set up two tables. One table that had my name and address information, and one table that had a record for each of the seven things that I wanted to order. So I would have seven records on that table. Okay. Questions? Okay. A relationship is in second normal form if it's in first normal form and no non-key attribute is dependent on only a portion of the primary key. Okay. We are going to look at example in a minute. And when we look at the example, you will see how that works. But essentially, a key can be made up of multiple fields. And a primary key is the thing that uniquely identifies a record. Okay? And again, we're going to look at an example, and that will make more sense. And a relationship is in third normal form if it's in second normal form and if it's the only determinants it contains are candidate keys. And I'm not even going to begin to explain that. We will look at an example and then I'll explain that. So, if a database is in third normal form, it's considered to be reasonably well designed. Okay, and so that is the goal that they work for when they put it together, is to get it into the normal form. Okay, so now we are going to go and look at an example. And if you go in under my homepage, normalization information on third normal form, and click on that, it should open a PowerPoint, and we will look at it. That's some vocabulary words. We're going to actually only look at a couple of them. A primary key allows you to get one and only REM record for the table. Everything else in the table is dependent on the primary key. So here at the college, your student ID is the primary key for the student record. Okay, for your record about you, your student ID is the primary key. It uniquely identifies. I can go in and find you if I know your student ID number. If I know your name, I go in and maybe find you, because if you have a name that three other people have, four possibilities will come up, and then I have to choose which one. So your name doesn't uniquely identify you unless you have a name that nobody else has. Your student ID does uniquely identify you. A foreign key we will talk about, but a foreign key is used to link two tables together, and we'll talk about that as we're going along. A candidate key is a key that can be used as a primary key. Years ago, the college used Social Security number as your student ID. Totally illegal, but everybody was doing it. Okay? You're not supposed to be using Social Security number as a ID unless you're the government and you're using it for our Social Security number. So, it is a candidate key in that it uniquely identifies you. But it's not a candidate key that we're allowed to use. The key that we use is your student ID. But a Social Security number is a candidate to be a key because it uniquely identifies you. Okay, those are the first normal and second and third normal form that I talked about. Okay, we're going to look at a donor database, a donation database. And this is the information I have decided that I want to keep on the donation database. I want to keep the ID number of the donor, the person that's giving me money, their name, their address, the date they first donated, how much money I'm hoping to get out of them, who the person that will contact them is, and then I want to keep the amount of each contribution, the date they made it. I have drives, so I have my first day of school drive, and everybody should give me money the first day of school, and then I have another drive, and then I have another drive, and for each drive, I have a drive number and a drive name and information about the drive. I definitely do not want to keep those all on one table. So we're going to look at this and figure out what I should do to set up the tables. So the first thing I've got is I am looking at this, and to put the first the relationship into first normal form, I have to remove repeating groups. And contributions, I'm hoping, are repeating groups. I'm hoping that people are going to give more than one contribution. And I am reasonably convinced that every contribution I make, they spend on sending me mail to try to get a second contribution out of me. So I really think my contribution is only supporting the effort to get my second contribution. But anyway, since a person can get many donations, the donations are a repeating group. The information about the donation needs to be removed. I will need to develop two tables, one containing the donor information and one containing the donation information. And actually, you'll find out that I'm going to end up with three tables, but that's the starting point. the nature of the data indicates a one-to-many relationship between the donor and the donation. Okay, so there's another vocabulary word for you. Things can be in a one-to-one relationship, a one-to-many relationship, or a many-to-many relationship. And we will look at those, hopefully, depending on the time. But a one-to-many relationship is one donor can give many donations. So it's a one-to-many relationship. One donor, hopefully, is going to give many donations. They may only give one, but they hopefully are going to give many. Okay? But a given donation only has one donor. So a donor can give many donations, but a donation, the individual donation is given by a single donor, by a particular donor. Okay. So, I have now got my donor information, and I'm going to be setting up a table for this. On the donor information table, the identification number uniquely defines each record, so it is the primary key. And everything on this table is about that person. Here's their ID. It's their name, their address, their date, their yearly goal, the contact person for them. So everything directly relates to the ID number. Okay? So I've pulled out the information about the donation, and I'm not done there. I've just started to do this. So I have now got the information about the donor, and I've got information about the donation. And again, this isn't complete. Okay? Now, one of the important things is that I need to be able to link these tables together. So the donor ID is also going to be over here, so that I have my link between these, and I know who gave the donation. Because one of the important things about the donation is who gave it. And so I am carrying the donor ID. This is the donor's ID number on both tables. And when I am writing in Oracle and writing in SQL and using both of these tables, I will put in a clause that says where this number on the donor table equals this number on the donation table, so that I will link them together, so that it can take information, therefore, from both tables. Okay. So, now we got to look at this donation table a little bit more. And I said, okay, what is going to uniquely identify a donation? Well, the donor ID is not going to uniquely identify a donation because I want them to give many donations. Decided that I would come up with a primary key that was made up of three parts. The drive number probably wasn't necessary, but for lots of reasons as to what I wanted to explain, I decided to have it there. Okay? So I am decided that the donation table is going to have a primary key that is made up of the donor ID number, the drive number the contribution was made to, and the date the contribution was made. And that will uniquely identify the record. And that date could be expanded to date and time if you really think somebody's going to give a donation twice in one day. Okay, so you can expand the date to date and time. And then it takes a minute to either send the donation or write the check or whatever. So date and time would handle it. Okay. So I'm deciding that the primary key for the donation table is made up of these three things. The ID number, the drive they gave to, and the date they gave it. and that will uniquely identify each thing. Again, the drive probably didn't have to be there. I could have done it by just saying the donor ID and the date. Okay, but lots of times I wanted to know what drive they give to, and that's an important part of what I'm doing, so I added in the drive. Okay, so those three things became my primary key. So a primary key is not necessarily just one thing. It is multiple things. When you have the one-to-many relationship that I talked about, where one donor can make many donations, you kind of know instinctively that the many donations is going to have to have more than one field making up the primary key, because the donor ID isn't enough. So I got to have something else that sets it apart, and the date is the big thing that sets it apart. But I decided again to use the drive as well. And where did I go? There, okay. Now I decided on further analysis, it's clear that the donation information is not in second normal form, because there are parts of the store or parts of the table that are dependent only on one part of the key. So drive name is dependent only on the drive number. Okay? I have the Christmas drive. Okay? It's got a drive number. The drive name is Christmas drive. The drive number is 123. The name is dependent on the drive number. The chairperson of the drive is also on the drive number. How much money the drive made last year is also the drive number. So all of those things in purple down below are dependent on only part of the primary key, which means it doesn't live up to second normal form, because second normal form said everything had to be dependent on the entire key. It had to relate to the entire key. So the amount of each contribution does relate, because it's a donor gave to a drive on a date. That's the amount they gave. So the donor gave to a particular drive on a particular date, and the amount of the contribution is the amount they gave. So that relates to all three parts of the key. These do not relate to the three parts of the key, so I need to pull them out of this table. Okay? So when I pull them out of the table, I now have a third table called drive information. And it has the drive number in it so that it relates the drive number to the drive number. It has the drive name and it has information about the drive. Okay? So the key for the drive information, the primary key, is going to be the drive number. And everything on that table relates to the drive number. And all of these are interrelated, because the ID links these two tables, the donor table and the donation table, and the drive number links the donation and the drive. Okay. This is a brief overview. Relational databases are a whole course. I'm just kind of giving you a very brief introduction, because we're going to be setting up databases and setting up tables, and you should kind of have a vague idea of how this all happens in the background. Questions? no questions because it makes sense, or no questions because it makes no sense, and therefore you can't ask any questions. But no sense? Okay. You can't think of any questions to ask. Okay.
It can be a little difficult if you haven't really done SQL or...
Oh, yeah. No, this is very, and as I said, I'm not going to be, I definitely want you to get this as background information. This is not a design course. We'll do a little bit of design, but not much. This is not a design course. This is the course that assumes that somebody has already designed the database, and now we're using it. But, that said, you should still have a vague idea what happened whenever behind the scenes when they did the design. Okay, now I added one more thing down here someplace, I think. Yes. And said, okay, to illustrate the normal form, let's say that we're carrying the contact name and the contact phone number for the person who's going to be my primary contact, okay? If you give lots of money, they assign a contact person to you to try to get more money out of you. So, I've heard tell. To illustrate the normal form, let's say that we're carrying contact name and contact phone number as well as the contact name, ID. We are now in violation of the third normal form because the contact name and the contact phone number are dependent on the contact ID. They are not dependent on the donor ID. Okay? Contact name is dependent on the contact ID. So if I change your contact person, that's going to mean the ID will change, which will mean the name will change and the contact phone number will change. These two things have to do with the contact ID. They do not have to do with the donor ID. Okay? So, what I do is I pull them out and I set up a fourth table called the contact table. And I give it a contact ID. The contact ID means it can relate. So if I am looking at the donor table and I've got the contact ID and I say, I want to know who that person is, I can link over to the contact table, match the contact ID, and get their name and phone number. So that illustrates third normal form, and third normal form basically said that everything on this table had to relate directly to the ID number, to the primary key. Well, contact name does not relate to the donor's ID. It relates to the contact ID. And the contact ID is not the primary key on this table. It is the primary key for a different table now. I've moved the stuff over.
So if you were going to query that, you would have to query the identification number, and then would you store that contact name as a variable and then pull it that way?
Well, I mean, if you're preparing a report, you're just going to put it on a report.
Right.
I mean, it depends on what you... I guess what I'm saying is it depends on how you're going to use it.
Yeah.
So in your select statement, which we'll get to when we get to SQL, you would say, get me this particular donor ID. Once you've got this donor ID, give me the contact ID and link it over to the contact table so you can give me the contact name and the contact phone number. So I would say for a particular donor ID, grab the contact ID, link over here to give me the contact name and the contact phone number. Okay.
And we'll see a lot of that linking going on.
as I said, I'm not asking you to do a lot of design. I am asking you to, we're going to use the design. So the main database that my examples go into is this donor database. And you're going to see on and on and on examples using the donor database. Okay? But it's a I already designed it. So now I'm just going to access information from it. And that's what SQL is all about, is accessing information. So we're going to go in and we're going to grab information from these tables and produce output that the company needs to know. Essentially, a database can have 50 tables in it. You use SQL to go in and make sense out of all those tables and grab the information. The second part of this course will move a little bit beyond SQL and we'll look at PLSQL, which is the programming language for SQL that Oracle uses. And so we'll actually write programs in PLSQL. Again, purpose being to access the database. The whole purpose of this course is to get data out of databases that people need. I've got the databases. They're worthless unless I know how to get the data out of them. Okay? And they pay good money to people who can get data out of the databases because, you know, the design of the database only happens when it's a new database, so when you're making major revisions to it. But the access to the database is on a daily basis. You are constantly going into the database and pulling out information.
What's the difference between this stuff and MySQL?
MySQL is a database like Oracle. And so, essentially, not a lot of difference because you use SQL to access Oracle. SQL is for relational databases, the major form of accessing and getting information. In Access, for example, Microsoft Access, they give you the user interface that you use, but everything behind the scenes is happening in SQL. In MySQL, everything is happening in SQL. Now you can take SQL and embed it into programming languages. So you can take SQL and embed it into PHP. You can take SQL and embed it into Visual Basic. You can take SQL and embed it into programming languages. So SQL is an incredibly practical thing to know because all relational databases use SQL. And so therefore, your learning curve, if you go to a company that doesn't use Oracle and doesn't use this, is a small learning curve because you already know SQL. Now, SQL is not 100% portable. There's probably in the high 90s, but people can't seem to leave it alone. You know Microsoft. It has to add a few bells and whistles. And others have done the same. But the vast majority of SQL is the same. Okay, the other set of vocabulary, and this class ends what? At 10:48? That extra 3 minutes that we have valuably added to our time that is going to make up for the fact that we miss a day at the end of the semester. But since we've added 3 minutes to every class, clearly it's not a problem that we're missing a day. And I have changed everything I'm teaching to incorporate those extra 3 minutes so that we, okay, moving right along. So anyway, okay. Okay, more relational databases, including one-to-one, one-to-many, and many-to-many relationships. And again, I should also have mentioned at this point, especially for the people who are saying, what the H is she talking about, that all quizzes and exams are open notes, open book. They are all given online. So if I decide to give you a quiz for some reason, I will give you a quiz and tell you that that quiz is online. It's open notes, open book, and you'll have 3 or 4 days to do it. So therefore, you can access this information and look things up. The final is also given online, and it is open notes and open book. So, that's just to say you don't have to memorize this, basically. Okay? Just, I could conceivably ask you to tell me what one-to-one is or one-to-many is, but I will then go back and look it up. Okay, one-to-one, one-to-many, and many-to-many. Okay, so those are the three relationships. One-to-one is something like this. If I decided that I wanted to keep employee information related to the employee in one place and relating to their actual pay and taxes another place, maybe for security reasons. This would have a high-end security on the tax table. This would have a lower security. More people could access that. This is a one-to-one relationship because each of my employees will have one record on each table. Okay, so this is a one-to-one relationship. I have my employee record on the employee table, has their name and address. My employee record on the tax table has information about their pay and their taxes. So each employee has one record on each table, and so that's a one-to-one relationship. Not many of those. One-to-many is a lot more. In a one-to-many, I have what we just looked at, the donor ID, their name, and all the other information about the donor. And I have the donation table, which has the donor ID, the drive number, okay, and there's going to hopefully be many donations from a given donor. So that's a one-to-many relationship. Every donation has just one donor, but every donor can give many donations. So that's a one-to-many relationship. And I gave an example down below of John Doe gave 3 donations, and you can see his 3 donations there. And then Ann Brown has given no donation yet, and this person is invalid because that person doesn't have a donor. Oops. I have never noticed that before. Okay, but that should have been 222 over there, or Ann Brown should have been 200. But clearly, right now, I've got a donation that was given by who knows who, and Anne hasn't given me a penny yet. Oh, well. Okay. And here is an inventory table where a vendor, presumably, is going to provide many of the items in my inventory. So I have an item in my inventory, and this is the vendor that I get it from. And to find out more about the vendor, I link over to the vendor table, and I get more about the vendor. So one vendor provides many items, a one-to-many relationship. One vendor would give me many items. So if, Hood is one of my vendors, Hood, is going to be giving me ice cream and butter and milk and whatever else they're going to be giving me. And again, if I tried to keep all of the items under the vendor table, I have a certain number of slots, and then the vendor can't provide another item for me. So I need to have them separate. And then I come over here, and this is a many-to-many relationship. And I saw this example one time a long time ago, and I just think it's a really good relationship, a good example. I have a movie table. And I have a movie, and I should have an I in it, a movie number and a movie name, and other information about the movie. What studio it was made by, etc. Then I have a star table. And the star has a star ID, star name, and other information about the star. Okay, now my problem is, I can't store the stars over on the movie table because I don't know how many stars there are going to be. There might be one star, there might be 100 stars. So I can't store the stars on the movie table because I don't know how many stars there are going to be, and that would be repeating loops. I can't store the movie on the star table, because a star, being a star, has probably been in a bunch of movies. And so I can't store the movies over there, because again, it's repeating groups. How many slots do I have? And once they fill all the slots, they can't work again. So what I do is I make what we call a bridge table. And the bridge table has the movie number and the star number. And that those together are the primary key. And what data can I keep on that table? Salary. The salary that a particular star made for a particular movie. So this is the movie, this is the star, and this is how much I paid to be in that movie. Okay, and if there are 20 stars in a particular movie, then that movie number is going to be in there 20 times with different star numbers each time and different salaries each time. Okay, so movie 111 had star 3,000. Movie 111 also had star 4,000. Movie 222 had star 1,000. Movie 222 had star 2,000 and 4,000. And movie 333 had star 2,000 and star 4,000. Okay. Questions? Last one. Okay, so here is a student table. So I said, okay, student ID number. This is the primary key. All information relates to it. I have the student's name, address, and phone number. I have the social security number. This is the candidate key because it could be used as a primary key. It uniquely identifies the student. Then I have their major code, the date they enrolled, and other information about the student, whatever. The major code lives in the major table where I have the name of the major and the chair of the department. Okay? So I can't carry the major name up there because major name relates to the major code, not the student ID. Okay, and think about the practicalness of it. If you have the major and you have the major code there is CI. If you're a computer information, CI is your major code. if we decide to change the name of the major and it was carried up here, we'd have to go back and change it in the Brazilian records. If we want to change the major, the name of the major down here, there's one field called CI, we go and change the name once. And the major name has been changed. So that's another practical reason for having the major in a separate table, is that if I change the name of the major, I can change it just once, as opposed to going to every student's record and changing the name of the major. Okay. Now, if I want to have information about the courses the student took, as I said, if I look back here, if I tried to put the course information on here, I'd have a slot for course one, a slot for course two, and I'd actually have to have multiple slots. So I'd have to have the code for course one and the grade you got in course one. The code for course two and the grade you got it. And whoops, maybe I need a third thing. Maybe I need the course, the semester you took it, and the grade. And so it just keeps growing. And I would have to do that for 30 different slots if I decided you could take 30 courses. What I've done in this next slide is said, okay, the student ID, the course code, and the semester taken all together are the primary key. So I have the student ID, so I have here your ID, CIS 150, fall 15. Okay, so I would have that there. Those are the primary key. The grade is the piece of data that I'm carrying. It relates to a student taking a course on a given semester. Okay, so I carry the grade as the data. Now, if I want to know the name of the course, I can't carry the name of the course there because the name of the course only relates to the course code. Name of the course doesn't relate to the student ID. Name of the course doesn't relate to the semester. It only relates to the course code. So if I want to know the name, that means I need to set up a course table that has the course code and its name and the number of credits for that course or something like that. Questions.
Is that an example of the second normal form or a third normal form?
Neither. Well, which one? Wait a minute. Depending on where you are. Third, right? I always have to stop and look. Did I tell? First normal form is repeating groups. Second normal form is everything has to relate to a particular key. And third normal form, that's why I give you the notes.
No dependencies
on not candidate keys. Okay, so that would be second. So a relationship is in second normal form if it's in first normal form. And no non-key attribute is dependent on only a portion of the primary key. So that would be second. And the determinants it contains. Okay, let me go back. Okay, so it has to relate to to Costco up here, and only if I try to put the name on here, it doesn't only reach part of it. So that's second home. But it's also, Costco is somewhat of a contaminant. So you can also say it gets in there too. Okay. Questions? Well, I am done. Again, this was more a vague overview. We will start SQL on Thursday, and that's where this course is going to focus. So don't leave here with your head hurting and think it's going to hurt constantly. It may, but it will hurt for different reasons. All righty.